Hello, my name is Richard Angiquitos. I am interviewing Joel Garcia at the Refugio, Texas. Today's date is September 21st, 2020. Mr. Garcia, do I have your permission to record this interview?
Yes, you do, Andrew.
Thank you, sir. Anyway, I thank you for coming here today for via Zoom and meeting with me, especially right now with the weather and everything. But I guess the best way to begin with this, sir, is can you tell me a little bit about yourself, sir? What is your background and what do you do for a living?
Well, I was born and raised in Refugio with exception of 3 years in the military. And I grew up over in the, what you would call the, not so prosperous part of town. We grew up with, you know, no TV, no air condition, no, I think one fan, and, you know, and just my dad worked a couple of jobs just to keep things going. But we graduated from Refugio, and I've been working most of my life. I started, we were little cutting grass, and then we, HEB, I started working for HEBs and joined the military. And then I came back to Refugio, started working with Pennzoil Producing, which was bought out by Devon Energy. And I work for Devon. I do the line locates for Devon Energy. And I also pastor a church, Joy Ministries.
Yes, sir. That brings me to this question, sir, was how did you become a pastor in Refugio, Texas with Joy Ministries?
Well, like I told you, I was raised kind of like in the hood, and there was role models were there, but they were mostly kept to themselves. So I grew up with the group that was always up to something, you know, and we're having fun and everything, but we grew up experimenting. And I became a pastor because I had a burden for those young kids that grew up like I did, that we needed to grow up well-adjusted. And so I became a youth pastor, and then I became a pastor. So we reach out mostly to youth and their families.
I see. And with your role as a pastor, sir, how does that role come into play during times like Hurricane Harvey or other natural disasters or severe storms?
During Harvey, we just happened to be there, you know. Another times, you know, like we buy shoes for Christmas, I mean, for back to school, and we for the kids, we do a party at Christmas, which brings in about 500 people, and we feed people, and we just try to meet a need so that the neighborhood can grow up well adjusted, and also just to make a difference and be there for anybody that needs assistance, and also to do what we're called to do. Darren Harvey, the reason that we opened up to be a shelter was because we built a new church, and we had to build it according to windstorm code because it was on the east side of 77. So what we did is we built it to code, and when Harvey came, there was actually in Refugio, they had a mandatory evacuation. When a mandatory evacuation, the county doesn't have to provide shelter, and there was no shelters in town. And I started getting calls about 12 o'clock, and we're going to open up. And I called the man that built the church, and I said, "Hey, what do you think?" He says, "Well, we didn't cut any corners, so it's a good time to find out." And so as a category one, Harvey was, and I said, "Well, we'll just open up, you know." And by that evening, it was a 2. But when it came in, it was a 4.
It grew drastically over the time period before it made landfall.
Over 50 miles, it made a difference.
Wow.
But we opened it up, and people started coming, and that's where we were at. But I came home and I prepared my house, my, you know, boarding up and everything. And we went to the church and we did that, boarded that up. And the missionary to the Philippines stayed there overnight. About 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, it started storming. People were coming in. So I said, you know, I'm going to go home. And I went home. I went to the store and I bought a bunch of eggs and I bought some tortillas. And I said, I'll just make some tacos for in the morning.
Yeah.
And feed everybody. And everybody goes home. And, you know, because I had been, I remember like hurricanes, like I think it was Carla. But we just went and spent the night. And then we went home. And there was another hurricane when we was in high school. It might have been Allen. And we went to the school and we sheltered down there and, you know, ate canned goods and then went home. But this was totally different.
And with the previous times where community organization were made in response to a national disaster, could you recall if that happened with those hurricanes as well, where you came together along with the community and helped assist it?
Those hurricanes happened when I was young. The only major hurricane that I've ever been in and had an involvement in was Harvey. And what was like the coordination with other churches and community groups, we started off real weak because what happened is that morning, I don't know if I'm getting ahead of you or...
No, you're good.
When I had my own things to take care of that night, my front door blew in and my windows blew out. And it was just a night. I stayed up all night and it started getting harder and harder to deal with it because it wasn't stopping. About 4 o'clock in the morning, I asked God to stop it and it stopped. About five. I walked outside and I saw like mobile homes in the middle of the road, power lines down, trees down. I personally had lost all the trees in my yard, my fences, my windows were blowed out. My neighbor's roof was gone, part of my roof was gone, and it's just devastation. So I went ahead and kept my word. Now, we still had gas. The electricity had gone out about 9 o'clock the night before, and communications went out about that same time. There was no cell phone, no landlines, and no electricity. So I made a bunch of tacos and I took them down to the church, and I had like 40 of them. But I didn't know that during the night, 40 families had come in.
Oh. And was this throughout the entire night, people were coming in?
No, he said he shut it down about 10 o'clock because the we were full and the, you know, there was just so much downpour and wind and everything. And so I guess whoever was going to come in was going to come in, you know?
Yes.
But in showing up there, I gave it all the food that I had, and people left and they came back and says, we don't have a house. So what did we have to do? We had to say, well, I guess you could stay here. And, but what do we do then?
Go
ahead.
With, people, leaving and whenever they found out their houses were, you know, and, severely damaged and they came back. Did you anticipate that may have that would have happened during the storm?
No, actually, I was thinking it was going to be like, you know, when we were little, that, you know, we just spend the night and went home, you know, that was not the case. People came back, and so we decided to. A man at the church had a food truck, so we started taking things from the freezers and started feeding people. And I didn't get a hold of my family to about a couple of days that I got a hold of my kids and told them it was okay. The next day, a crew from Austin came, and they did a story on Joy Ministries, and there's where my son and my daughter found out that we were okay because they saw us on that.
So. And they your son and your daughter saw you on the news, and that's how they knew you were okay. Wow, it was not through texting or calling them, but actually literally from the news cycle.
Yeah, because there was no getting. They didn't set up communications for about 5 days. Red Cross didn't come in for about 7 days. FEMA, I don't know when they came in. But, you know, everybody was looking for Red Cross. Everybody was looking for FEMA. But you know what? It was kind of like everybody was taking care of their own selves. Pretty soon, some of the other churches, we were so busy where we were at because we were feeding like 500 people a day.
Wow.
And we were doing it. We ran out of food, and because people were just bringing in, like the people that stayed at the church, they went and got their stuff from the freezers. And I was telling a friend of mine that we were on the keto diet, and we didn't even know it. that's all we were eating. There were no vegetables. There was no fruits. And about 8 days into it, HEB bought us all their vegetables. And we were able to feed people vegetables and fruits, and because they didn't have any power also. Mm-hmm. But then we got a few generators, and we kept on. I had a couple of gas propane tanks, and some other guys had some propane tanks. We put it all together. Then my son started a Facebook, not a Facebook, but a what they call it. It's an account, a GoFundMe account. And people started, I guess they found out there that we were running out of food. And so.
I see. And backtracking a little bit more on the events of Harvey, one thing I was wondering was, how did you get the message across to people that you were open to shelter some people in? And it more of a post or word of mouth?
What happened is that I called the sheriff about 12 o'clock, we made the decision about 12 o'clock. About 1 o'clock, I called the sheriff, and I told him, look, got some people got nowhere to go. They don't have no vehicles or nothing, so we're going to open up. And, you know, I knew the responsibility that we had, but I was trusting God and that our building was built according to code. And we didn't cut any corners. And so we were going to do the best we could do. So we made beds out of the chairs, put them together. And some people bought their own blankets. And so that's most, and it was probably word of mouth more than anything.
Word of mouth. I see. And then this was spread throughout the community, of course, as the aftermath of Harvey came.
After Harvey, you know, like I told you, there was no electricity, no water. No, and what happened, you know, we were still getting some showers, and we have a horse trough where we baptize people. So I put it in the corner of the church to catch water so that we would have water for, you know, not for drinking, but just to, you know, freshen up and, you know, things of that nature. So we had to get organized there at the church, and we had a group that one man took care of the inside, another man took care of the grounds, and then another man took care of the food, and some ladies took care of the food. And so we started cooking, and then about the third night, a man drove up with a trailer. This is still emotional. And he says, man, I've got a trailer full of food and water. He says, can I put it here? He was headed to Rockport. But he somehow or other, he said, man, I just showed up right here. So, man, we unloaded that. So we had some distribution where we're able to distribute water, you know, toilet paper and things like that to people. And so that's where we started. And the food just started coming and the people started, people from far as West Texas. I even had one person came all the way from Florida with a trailer full of food.
All the way from Florida?
Yeah, because some of this, some other channels picked up that story.
Mm-hmm.
It even came out on CBN, Christian Broadcasting Network. And I think NBC picked it up. And so the word got out. But then other churches also, and like I said, I never went over there to see the other churches. They never came over here because I know there was two more churches in town, but it was just like that, man. It was, I mean, you were too busy.
With your immediate, what's happening in front of you, right?
Yeah, because like I said, we would feed in the morning, we're feeding at lunch, and we're feeding at supper. Wow. And then we get ready to start again in the morning.
But, I see.
We did that for 15 days.
Jeez. During those 2 weeks, was there any coordination with emergency services, the hospital?
Yeah, about 5 days or so, Red Cross came in and they bought a bunch of cots for everybody. And they started doing their, while they bought us cots while they set up their cots over at the expo center. They got set up over there, and then they got organized and they started taking the people from Joy Ministries over there about, you know, 8 or 9 days after everything had happened. And so things started getting organized like that. And then like I said, then FEMA came in. Then, but before that, somebody said, hey, FEMA's at the fairgrounds. So everybody took off to the fairgrounds, and mm-hmm. they came back and said, FEMA's not at the fairgrounds. And they didn't know what FEMA was at. But then I have a friend from work, him and his sons and his wife came in, and they started signing people up. Once we got, communications up, mm-hmm. once the city and the county got communications up and everything, then we could log on to your computers and things like that. So they came in and they started registering people for FEMA. And then the next couple of days, my son and my daughter came and they did that all day. They registered people for FEMA. And we were just trying to do the best that we could. There was a group out of the valley. They came in and was giving tetanus shots, and it was a nursing group, and they were monitoring, making sure everybody was healthy and everything of that nature.
After the immediate aftermath of Hurricane Harvey, and while people were still at the church and sheltering, did you ever find that any of them were trying to go back to their homes to look through the wreckage and maybe?
Yeah, they would go back, and some people would go back and go through their stuff, and you know, because we lived right across the street. Our church is right across from the government housing, mm-hmm. and that was tore up. So you know, you could see that the piles of stuff was just starting to pile up in the road and the parking lot, you know, where people were cleaning up, but. Yeah, people would go back and try to come in with garbage bags full of clothes, and you know, they said that's all they had. And but you know, we did the best we could.
Yes, and with regards to that too, with damage of the homes, were a lot of course stores and you know, fast food areas and other buildings. How bad was the damage in all those areas?
Well, like I said, we had no electricity, and so there was no gas. There was, matter of fact, the Valero in town, and also there was another place here called the it was a new place. Right at the entrance of town, I can't remember the name, but they bought all of their food over so that we could cook it. You know, like they had a bunch of burritos, you know, their fast food burritos, egg rolls and things of that nature.
Yes.
They bought all that food, all their frozen food over, and we were cooking it. And most of the times, you know, we'd have 3 square meals, but somebody would come in and we'd have 3 square meals, and then somebody would come in like, you know, 10 o'clock or 2 o'clock, and, you know, they'd make some burritos, or we always had something to eat there, burritos, chips, or egg rolls. But we always had a big pot of coffee. Well, we had several pots of coffee. And I had a man come up to me, says, Joel, do you have a cup of coffee? I said, yeah, man. And I got him a big cup of coffee. He says, you want anything in it? He says, no, I'll take it black. You know, things like that. You know, a couple of guys came in and says, man, I never thought I had to stand in line for a taco. I said, you know what, brother? We all stand in line. So, you know, but it was a good fellowship, that everybody was like in the same boat, and there was no, because I'm going to tell you something, brother. I don't care how much money you had, you couldn't buy nothing. Because everything was closed, you know. So you couldn't buy no food. You couldn't buy your soda water. I mean, I wanted a live Dr. Pepper so bad. And they called us over to the Valero to pick some stuff up. And I asked the lady for a diet Dr. Pepper. And it was hot, but it was good. But, things like that, you learn to appreciate what you have in these times, and you look at the people that I'm going to tell you something. The sheriff came through about maybe 8 days or something to it. He asked me what I needed, and I said, man, we need a, because we got rode up, because the state came in, and not rode up, they're trying to help us do a better job, so that we got Skittle cans, we got a hand washing station, you know, and we had to do a few other things, because we had like elderly men coming in wheelchairs, mm-hmm. and guys that just stayed at their house. They weren't going to, you know, they're just older men, and they were going to stay there at the house. But they're, you know, they're friendly, they're good people, but they needed assistance, you know, with, you know, some of them still, you know, they wore diapers. The missionary to the Philippines was taking care of the inside. So we had to assist in taking care of them, you know. We changed them, you know, we cleaned them, and we made sure everybody was happy. Yes. But, you know, the sheriff bought in a generator and powered the church. And that was truly a blessing.
That is awesome.
And I'll tell you a story. It was about 9 o'clock in the evening. And I don't know how long it was, but the mosquitoes had gotten so bad. And this lady came to the door, and she had dialysis that day. She had went out of town to get dialysis. And the mosquitoes were tearing her up, and she was just so weak. And I got her a cot and a mattress, and I picked up a fan, and I put it on her, and I told her just to lay down there and rest. And that's what it's about, man, just doing for other people. And just, if everything was just for that lady, because she was hurting, mm-hmm. it's well worth it. If the whole situation was just for that lady, but there was kids that would go out there and they'd play football, and, you know, they were just trying to be adjusted until they could find a place to live. Or a lot of them got moved to Beeville, where there were motel rooms and mm-hmm. electricity and power. And so FEMA put them up there. After a while, FEMA came in and got the ball rolling. And so we stayed there till, you know, to the end, you know.
Yeah. And in the aftermath, of course, you did mention some healthcare physicians and like nurses and everyone came in to assist the people there. Would you happen to know how long they stayed there or how long they were there after Hurricane Harvey?
Well, they would come in as a group. They would come in with a group. I would get a call every day. Mm-hmm. How are you doing? How many people are still there? What's going on? It was a nursing group out of the valley. And I think they would send people. They came in one day and gave us all tetanus shots. The next day they came in and checked, blood pressures and make sure everybody was that had medications was on medications. And they should, check blood sugars and things of that nature. They stayed there till we shut. They didn't stay there. They would come and go. They were there. They would come and go, and they would do what they came to do that day, mm-hmm. and ask us if we needed anything, and then they'd leave. I guess they'd go somewhere else, but you could always call them, and I was always assured that I got a call. I don't even remember their names, who they were with, but they would check in every day.
I see. And during that time, of course, you have mentioned that more and more people were coming in. It became more of a fellowship and everything. Do you think, in retrospect now, once the Hurricane Harvey has, it's been 3 years now, that storm, that natural disaster, brought the community more closer in times like that?
Yeah, I say a fellowship is because people used to come there like in the mornings. And they would drink coffee, and they would sit, and they would talk, a group of maybe 20, mm-hmm. Different groups. And then maybe during the day, people would come in. Then what happened, after the church cleared out, some people didn't want to leave because they didn't know where they were going. They were still secure. But we had to move them on. I told them, you have to go to the Red Cross so you can get into the system so they can start working with you. And they did. So then we, after those 15 days, we made Joy Ministries into a cooling shelter, a cooling place where people were coming in. The people were bringing groups into the refugio to do work. And we had Gatorade and we had sandwiches at lunch. And you can come in there. We had that air conditioning going. And people would cool off and talk a little bit and get a plan and go back out to work. And we did that. We did that for a couple of weeks.
And it was still summer too, after Hurricane Harvey, right?
Yeah.
It would still get pretty hot outside.
It would get hot. And then I'll tell you what, I've never seen so many mosquitoes in my life. They're mosquitoes. But, you talk about, people still talk about it. Because people would come by and they would get plates and we were feeding people in Bayside and people in Oswell. But people would come by and they would talk and, it was a place of comfort, just knowing that you're all kind of in the same boat.
Yeah.
And then people would come by and says, well, can you help me with this? And well, let's get some guys and let's go tarp up a house or something. And so it was just a place to get a plan and get a good hot cup of coffee and get the day started and then come back and eat. But we had some good people too. The people that were staying at the church really came and they started, they really ran the business. They ran like the food distribution, like people that didn't have no place to go, they were waiting on Red Cross. Mm-hmm. They do the food distribution, the organization, the helping with the cooking, the cleaning up, because it would be like a mess, things of that nature. The city of Refugio showed up with like Skittle cans and really helped us out. National Guard came through, and the county of Refugio also. A couple of those deputies were really, really good. They'd always check in on you and make sure you were doing all right.
That's awesome. And in the after, while this is still going on too, you still have your own home also that you had to go back and take a look at too, right?
Yeah. But I have to do what I have to do first, but like, but the blessing, I came home one day and there was a guy in my backyard cutting up a tree. And he said, I was just driving by, man, and I figured you wanted this tree off your shed. And I said, man, I appreciate it. And then sometimes people would say, you know, what do you got to do at your house? And I said, well, you know what? I've got to take the boards off my windows. And a guy came over and took the boards off for me. And, you know, I would come home at 10 o'clock at night. And I had a generator running, and then I'd take a bottle bath, you know, with bottled water. And then I'd be back up about 4 o'clock, getting ready to go up there and help start cooking. But it took a while to fix my house, but, you know, I had to redo the living room, a new roof. Had to re-level it because that night I felt my house move. That's when I asked the Lord to stop it. It's man, it's emotional. And 3 years later, I can still feel the emotion.
Yes.
And I went to my Bible. And I found a scripture, and I was reading, you know, kind of just, you know, you open it up every once in a while, you look at it, and it comes to the scripture, it's in Proverbs, it says, keep my commands and my precepts, for I'm a God that loveth thee. And that's all I needed, man. Not worried about my house, he's not worried, you know what? Lord is worried about me. So I just, you know, continue to serve and do what we have to do.
And with that sense of community behind you too.
You know, the community knows that they knew there was a place to come in because I would see like little ladies that would come in that sometimes I didn't ever see them and they were quiet. And then I'd ask them if they needed any help and says, yes, I need a tree out of my yard and get a couple of guys together. And there was a bunch of game wardens that came to town. The Texas police, Texas. Anyway, they were game wardens. And man, them guys did a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know, if you needed, and they were young, strong guys, and they, man, if you needed someone to go pull a tree out or get, those guys were ready. You know, they were looking for something to do. They were servants. So, but that was, I think that brought the community together because of different walks of life that showed up. Mm-hmm. People that had moved away from Refugio, friends of mine, they came back with their RV and they set it up across the street and they worked for the whole weekend. Wow. You know, and just wanted to, this was their home. They had moved, but they came back to help. You know, just I showed up one day and there was a guy out of Houston sitting in the yard there with a big barbecue pit, man, barbecuing for everybody. And, you know, one time a man showed up from the valley. He was actually going to Houston, but he was loaded down with tamales. Mm-hmm. And he dropped down about 3 ice chests of tamales and, you know, everybody ate well. And, it was a thing that you know, I have to take it. It was only the Lord.
I see.
Because you know what? I was asked what happened last night, and all I could say was this. Someone let loose a monster. That's all I could describe that. It was a monster. And we were very fortunate nobody died. Because that's one of the most traumatic things I've been through, you know. And I'm a grown man. I can imagine what the ladies and the kids went through.
Yes.
But you know what? Everybody's got a story there. Because I talked to a lot of people and there was things like when my door blew in, I had to put my couch there It took me an hour and a half to secure my door. I couldn't hold it. A friend of mine told me that him and his son sat on an ice chest because their door blew in and they pushed back on the door for hours.
Jeez.
So, you know, things like that, that would happen. A man with his kids, you know, hunkered down in the bathroom. A lady told me, she said that she was at her house and it got so bad that she jumped in her bathtub and she put up the pot to cook tamales over her head and put a mattress over her. You know, but it's things that you did. I thought that was kind of funny. I said, for real? She said, yeah, for real. You know, I went to school with her, you know, it's kind of funny, you know, but it was for real. You know, she said, man, I didn't know what else to do. But those are things that we went through, and we all shared that. And everybody, you could ask anybody what happened during Harvey. My dog even today, my dog cannot stand a storm. I had to put her at the kennel in Beeville for 15 days because I couldn't take care of her and do the things that I needed to do.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I have to give her something to calm her nerves. And it was because of that.
I see. The storm is very, very ferocious too. Not just for in the areas of the Refugio all the way down to, north of Corpus Christi into Houston. The entire area was in the direct path of Harvey, and it lasted for a while.
I didn't know what was going on in Houston with all the flooding and everything. I was just, you know, we didn't know. We didn't have no communications. We didn't know what was going on, all the flooding and what they went through. But we needed to do what we had to do here. And, you know, and after a while, the things kind of settled down a little bit, and then we had to clean up the church and, you know, start all over again. It took me, be myself, I spent $25,000 fixing my house.
Jeez.
And it's okay. It's okay. But it just like this last Hannah and Beta, mm-hmm. You get concerned. And you say, well, you don't want to say, well, I hope it goes somewhere else because somebody's going to get hit. You know, it just so happened that Harvey was a monster.
Yes.
It came right over Refugio, Rockport. And people are still recovering. You know, we still have tarps on the roofs. They're still rebuilding houses. They're still building houses. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, just in my neighborhood, in the backyard, I've got two houses that were built by Habitat for Humanity, and they're getting ready to tear down another house, and they're going to build a house there. It's just because the mold and people can't live in it.
Yeah.
But Samaritan's Purse and Habitat for Humanity had come in and did a lot of work.
Nice, nice. That's for those groups to come into over the days. We're a big beneficial for the community of the Refugio too. Now that it has been 3 years, and it just seemed like the storm is recent too. These years are going by much, much faster now. Rebuilding efforts for the entire community of the Refugio, would you say they were pretty slow overall? As you mentioned, that there's still recovery in the area, right?
You know, everything takes time, but things have been steady moving. Things have been steady getting rebuilt. You know, it's just when will it be over? I think, I told a person after the storm that Refugio will never be the same. it changed completely. Different houses, different people moved away. It'll never be the same as I knew it when we were growing up in it. You know what I'm saying? It's a totally different town. I think that there is a lot of more unity. There's a lot more, you know, not taking things for granted. You know what I'm saying?
More of a communal togetherness, right?
Yeah, you had to, man. Because you know what? Money couldn't buy you a drink if you wanted to, a soda. Couldn't buy you a bag of chips because it just wouldn't cash register. You couldn't use it. You know? Yes. You know, we started getting gas from out of town. I mean, I drove all the way to Odom one day to pick up gas. And I had some friends over there in Port Bay, and I took them diesel, water, things like that, because they didn't have anything. But you stayed busy.
Yes.
You know what's for real.
Especially in the aftermath of that, too. That was, and 2017 was, I believe, not so much of an active season, but whenever the hurricanes formed, they formed, too. In recent years, have you noticed do you believe that storms are becoming more and more common, like the strength of them and the amount of them as well?
Well, this year there was somewhere you had to start over with the, you know, with Alpha, Beta, you know, running out of names. And like Louisiana's been like getting, yeah, they just got hit, you know. You just don't want a storm to come this way, man, because it's, I don't know what it is, but I believe they're getting stronger. Or maybe we're much just more aware of it, but we've always had storms. You know, Carla came through here, and then there's another one that devastated Corpus, and it's a force to be reckoned with, and we just need to take preparations, you know, and it's part of life, you know. If it's not a storm, it's something else, you know. I mean, we look at it today and what we're living in a time of a virus that we can't even see. I told somebody in the church the other day, I said, you know what, we're worried about people coming in the church and shooting it up. You know, now we're worried about something we can't even see coming in the church. You know, I think that things are headed to difficult times.
Do you believe that maybe throughout those adversities that are coming up, the sense of hope and, you know, resilience can counter that as well as a community?
If everybody did what they were supposed to do, I think we would be okay. You know, if everybody does what we're supposed to do and take it as this is for real. You know, this is for real. You know, when I looked out my door and I seen two mobile homes in the middle of the street, and every tree in my yard down, I said, you know, this is real.
Yeah.
You know, so it's a tough one, but through it all, we'll persevere. You know, I mean, people did it. You know. Been doing it a lot, you know, you got to get tough. I mean, the guys that came over on the Mayflower, they didn't have a motor, brother. They sailed.
Yeah.
And so, you know, America's been bought up and grows on perseverance. And with a little bit of help, we can all persevere. And I think Joy Ministries was there at a time where we needed to be. Not only to express love, but to give somebody the comfort of sitting down, drinking a cup of coffee and enjoying a taco or something. And just for a minute says it's going to be okay.
And
we've done that.
And I think for a lot of people for that means the world to them, especially at that moment they found themselves in.
Yes.
Yes.
You know, we were in a tough times, but you know what? You can't rise to an occasion and have victory if everybody's not headed in the same direction. And that's what we did. You know, we headed in the same direction. And, but that was because, honestly, we were all jacked up. So, you know what I'm saying? When you're at ground level, only place you can go is up, brother. So we, that's what we did. You know, saw my wife work, and the ladies at the church, they worked, and everybody that came, if they, you needed a hand or what can we do? I said, well, you know, somebody needs some help over here down the road, and let's do it. And nobody kept tabs like, hey, I'm working harder than you, or, you know, I'm not coming back tomorrow because all you want. No, here's what are we going to do today?
There's a shared responsibility among everyone.
Yeah, well, it was all, you know, like I said, we was all in the same boat. And we needed to row in the same direction.
Yeah. Wow. That was amazing, too. The thing about throughout all that adversity, of course, with the storm and the damage, everyone was able to persevere in the aftermath. And even now, that still is needed with today, with, as you said, with the storm. Even as we're speaking right now, we have Tropical Storm Beta. I don't know if it's Hurricane Beta or with the virus, and able to bring people together.
The other day when the hurricane hit Louisiana, a group here in Refugio was taking a trailer over there. And I told my wife, we need to go get some things to put in that trailer. One was a chainsaw. The other was things to clean up with, and the other was food, you know, and water, because you're going to always use those, man.
Yes.
You know, you got down trees and people need to refuel, and it's happening a lot more. You know, you look at things like the fires in the West Coast, and, you know, people losing things, losing everything.
With the force of Mother Nature.
Yeah. But, you know, we're going to persevere. And as a pastor, I got to say, you know, if it hadn't been for Jesus, there'd be no hope at all, brother.
Joe Garcia, this is an amazing time to reflect back on Hurricane Harvey and offer your insights of the aftermath and the resilience and the hope that brings to this now, 3 years later, and going forward, of course. It's a main tool to use against this adversity.
Yeah, I do want to tell you that when people are put in a spot to where they have to overcome, all you got to do is lead. And I think that that's what it takes today, is good leaders. And we're going to be okay. And even with the young children, good leaders. And, you know, and it's a good thing that we take time to recognize that we are of value, you know. And if you can't go, row the boat. I mean, fill the, you know, load the wagon.
Yeah.
And always stay busy, man. Always stay busy, and we're going to be all right. I appreciate you. And
yes, sir.
I hope this helped you.
It was perfect. This is amazing, sir. I should be thanking you, actually, for taking time out of your day, sir, and sharing this with me, too. Especially in a community that's only 30 miles from where I live, too. I still remember Harvey like it was yesterday. And
yeah,
it was insane.
Well, I tell you what, honestly, I don't ever want to go through that again. If you need anything else, call me, okay?
I definitely will, sir. I'm going to check tonight, see how everything went through the audio. I think it worked out well because I did a little test run with my sister over the weekend, fixed some things up, and like I said, tomorrow, either I'll pick up the legal release form in the morning if someone's by.
Yeah, you just want to pick it up in the morning? My wife will be here.
That's fine. Yeah, and I'll do that around. I'll be right there about maybe 10.
That'd be fine.
Thank you, and I'll submit everything. Yeah, but I really appreciate taking your time out today, sir. This was a
Sure.
wonderful experience for me, and as you can tell, I'm also learning a lot in oral history. One thing is narration. I got to practice my speaking voice, but I think I got the structure and the questions down. So we got to start somewhere.
You're gonna be all right, brother.
Thank you, sir.
All right, man.
All right. Have a great evening, sir.
A good night.
Good night, sir.
Yes, sir.